UCCF's Be Thinking website, bethinking.org, offers you free access to some of the finest apologetics resources in the world. Make sure you sign up as a BeThinker to receive our monthly email. The BeThinking email is packed with handy information highlighting new articles, film, book and music reviews, and is filled with practical examples of how you can make good use of the excellent and insightful material on bethinking.org to help you grow as a thinking Christian. BeThinkers combine a good understanding of the issues with a character that shows that the biblical truths that the BeThinker describes are authentic and life-changing. Log on to bethinking.org and become a BeThinker today.
History is unknowable. I love this quote. A historian may say, I like this work of history better than that one, but not this one is truer than that one. In our universities, this statement is increasingly made. You know, people have different views about history. What's to say your view is superior to theirs? We can't have any access to historical truth. It's all just subjective opinion. Now, obviously, this is part of a kind of broader cultural context, and Bill Craig was talking about this a bit last night, of a disillusionment with the idea of absolute truth, disillusionment with the idea of progress in science, disillusionment with the idea that texts can tell us anything, disillusionment with the idea that a particular religion can be true for everyone. And in the same way, this skepticism is around and alive and kicking when it comes to the whole subject of history. So how can we know that anything in history, even recent history, happened? The theologian Saunders, E.P. Saunders, some of you may have come across him, said historical events could not be verified even if we had a video recording of them. We can't know anything in history, however much evidence we may have about those events, however recent those events may be, we can't know. And so then this skepticism about history in general is focused into the person of Christ in particular. And then we as Christians are forced to deal with it. So how's this come about? Well, in the mid-19th century, most Western historians conceived of history as a kind of exact science. There were facts which you could discover from historical sources, and then those facts could be objectively presented to other readers, and you could have an exact, objective view of what happened in the past. So a historian like Leopold von Ranke would typify this approach. He said this: the historian must present the past as it actually happened. Okay, so it's possible to access history. It's a bit like science. We just go and look at the source material and we present it as fact. By about the 1920s, this kind of ideal of historical objectivism came under fire. And the historian J.H. Robinson said, objective history is just history without an object. And history began to be seen as more of a matter of interpretation. So personal interpretations of the texts were involved. Personal agendas of the people who had written the texts were teased out. And we came to a point in the 1960s when, along with kind of deconstruction philosophers, historiographers began to say similar things. We can't know history at all. So the historiographer Greg Denning says, recorded history is no more than an illusion of the past. In reality, it is determined by the cultural context and personal preferences of the historian. He says, history is something we make rather than something we learn. And he says about his students, I want to persuade them that any history they make will be fiction. I want to persuade them that any history they make will be fiction. So then, when we come to try and present the historical Jesus, the claims about the historical Jesus, which I don't know if any of you have been in the apologetics track, Bill Craig did an excellent session on the resurrection, and he uses arguments about the historical Jesus very effectively. But often, before we can get to that point, we have to deal with this question. Is history knowable at all? Now, there's a kind of even sharper edge to this objection given to us by a guy called Foucault. Some of you will have heard of him. He's a famous postmodern thinker. And he argued that history can't make any claim to be value-free or neutral. So any desire on the part of a historian to know history or to convey history to others is an attempt by that historian to take power over you as an individual. And he likens it to Nietzsche's idea of the will to power. So any attempt to try and convince you as a kind of postmodern skeptic that something really happened in history and we can know about it is a kind of malevolent attempt by a historian to take power over your life. So not only is history unknowable, anybody who tries to make a historical claim to you, as we would as Christians about the person of Christ, is engaging in a power struggle over your life which is inherently sinister and evil. And so we have that whole edge to it going on. And that might explain the kind of discomfort that people sometimes feel when we say to them something simple like, you know, are you interested in reading a historical account of the life of Jesus? Why are people defensive about that? Or perhaps it's as Foucault articulates it for us. So the question then remains for us as Christians, how are we going to deal with this? How do we deal with this objection to historical truth? Now, as I said, I've come across this question quite a lot in the last 5 years. I would say probably particularly amongst university students. Not all of these questions are questions of university students, but this one in particular probably is quite often from students. And I have found it helpful to take what's called a pragmatic approach. And there's a historian called James Kloppenberg who has come up with this theory of what he calls pragmatic hermeneutics. And what he says is that historical events must be accessible to us because we know things like the Holocaust or even recent history of 2 weeks ago are accessible to us. We all know that. But how do we access them? He says we access history via converging lines of evidence. We don't just take one tiny piece of evidence totally out of context and build a whole worldview on that. But we take lots of pieces of historical evidence and they converge on a point. And when they converge, that gives us access to history. Now, in my experience in evangelism, it's interesting when discussing this to perhaps move away for a moment from the historical Jesus and take another example in more recent history, which is perhaps more contentious. For example, an example like the Holocaust. We see in the media in Europe this whole movement of revisionist historians who are trying to claim that the Holocaust didn't actually happen. The whole thing was a hoax. You know, it's all been made up and kind of built upon by Zionists, and we've all been taken in by this huge hoax. Now, the postmodern view must be that the view that the Holocaust did not happen is equally valid to the view that it did happen. If we can't have access to history, we can make no distinction between those two claims. Very few postmoderns are prepared to go that far when it comes to something like the Holocaust. Can the Holocaust be legitimately denied? Is it equally valid to say it didn't happen as to say it did happen? Now, the amazing thing is about this that General Eisenhower, who documented a lot of kind of first-hand evidence, if you like, of what had happened in the concentration camps, in his diaries predicts that in Europe, one day, it might be that people would say that the Holocaust was based on rumors and was propaganda against the Nazis. He predicts this in 1949. Think he ever would have dreamed that could happen within 50 years of the events? Within the lifetime of the eyewitnesses. So if we can encourage our friends to think about the consequences of denying history for a modern kind of event like the Holocaust, perhaps we can encourage them to consider Kloppenberg's approach, pragmatic hermeneutics. Perhaps we can encourage them to think about this idea of convergence of lines of evidence. And so if we take an event like the Holocaust, how do we have access to it? Well, we have, first of all, written documents. And these might be letters, memos, bills, orders, speeches, articles, confessions, all kinds of written evidence, again, from different perspectives. Then secondly, we would have eyewitness testimony of Jewish survivors and SS perpetrators, local townspeople, Nazis, all kinds of different eyewitness statements. Then thirdly, we would have photographs. And again, those would be from different perspectives. And then there's the archaeological remains, if you like. And then finally, there's this sort of catch-all phrase, inferential evidence. So for something like the Holocaust, that would be the population statistics. The disappearance of approximately 6 million people has to be explained. And that points to, with other things, converges on a picture of what happens in the past. So then, if we can access an event like the Holocaust via converging lines of evidence, if we're open-minded people, can't we also access the events around the life and death and resurrection of Jesus Christ via converging lines of evidence? Those who want to argue for the impossibility of historical truth when it comes to Jesus must also argue for the impossibility of historical truth when it comes to the Holocaust. And very few people want to do that. So when we've begun with our pragmatic approach, hopefully to convince our friend that it's possible to know what happened in history, that we need to be open-minded about it and then look at the sources, it's then that the apologetic materials like Josh McDowell and others about documents and manuscripts and extra biblical sources about the person of Christ come into play. But it's only then, only after we've dealt with this question of history.